Hey guys, before we get started, this podcast has some strong language. You've been warned.
Hi, this week's episode of The Rabble was recorded at 4:36 p.m. on Thursday, May 15th, 2019, in the great state of Texas, where the official state stone is the petrified palm wood.
Welcome to The Rabble, a podcast by Rouser. We are three progressive Texans who felt like flipping some tables after the 2016 election. But we decided a more productive use of our energy would be to flip congressional seats instead. So for the last couple of years, we've been learning to become activists, eventually quitting our corporate jobs to form our new venture, Rouser. Our goal is to inspire other progressive Texans to get some shit done and to share the stories of the candidates, electeds, and organizers who inspire us to do shit. Consider us your humble, uncivil servants.
Every week, we will have three distinct segments. First up is always political fuck, marry, kill. Now, as you guys know, we are not fucking, marrying, and killing politicians, but rather political stuff that's going on this week. For example, this week I want to marry the comeback queen, Gina Ortiz Jones, who is running against Will Hurd in Texas District 23. If you want to check her out online, you can do so at GinaOrtizJones.com.
Get those last 926 votes, Gina. Then join me for Did Y'all Know, where we'll talk about how women of color are underrepresented in positions of power in politics. We'll be joined by a shero of ours, Ashanti Golar, political director for Emerge America and founder of the Brown Girls Guide to Politics.
And this week, we're going to mix it up and we're all going to be taking on the shit to do because women's rights got flushed down the toilet and that's all our problem.
Boo.
We're your hosts. I'm Kristen Gunn.
I'm Shelley Hayes McMahon.
I'm Becky Bullard. Together, for this week, we're Rouser, and this is The Rabble. Today's episode of The Rabble is brought to you by Rouser.
Wait,
isn't that us?
That's us!
Oh, yeah, it is! Did you know that you can hire us to throw events?
Oh my God, I want to hire us to throw an event.
Maybe you are a candidate who wants a kick-ass campaign launch party, or maybe you're an organization that wants to reach new volunteers or raise money, but you're tired of throwing the same old fancy silverware kind of fundraiser. Not that there's anything wrong with those. Love me some crudité. But maybe you want to try something new. Well, we can help. This past Sunday, we threw a book launch party for political photographer Casey Chapman Ross, who said it was beyond everything she'd hoped for. Ooh. We turned out a couple hundred people to the Butterfly Bar here in Austin, where we moderated a panel of fierce female activists, played a trivia game about where famous Texan rabble-rousers got their start.
Shero Showdown!
And heard from pint-sized lemonade stand activists. Also, there was face painting and beer! Not usually at the same time, although I personally love both those things. Are you intrigued? Email shout@rousertx.com to inquire about hiring us to do your next event.
And let's just be really real. Crudité is just a vegetable plate.
You know, but it's so fancy.
That is a good point.
I'm glad that you brought that up.
It's like old dry vegetable plate.
It's fancy carrots, guys.
All right, before we get into the FMK, we need to introduce our guest host.
Yay!
Ashley is out on vacation in Hawaii this week, praying to the gods of Tafiti to save our reproductive rights. Not really, but I totally see Ash saving the world at some point that way.
So. I did see her post a picture on top of a volcano, so maybe that's what she was doing up there.
Let's hope so.
But I am so excited to welcome Shelley Hayes McMahon. She was actually a guest on episode 5 of The Rabble, where she talked about her candidacy for Cedar Park City Council. And she is currently an active Williamson County Democrat, amazing mom to two young men, and a mover and a shaker with Annie's List, which if you don't know about them, y'all should know about them. They're an amazing organization here in Texas that helps elect progressive women. Thank you so much for being here today, Shelley.
I'm so pleased to be here. I can't even tell you. So thank you, Ashley, for going to pray to the gods to save the rest of us. Let me hang out with Kristen and Becky today. Yeah, it's going to be a good time.
And one thing you don't know, you won't be able to tell by listening to her on the podcast, Shelley is the best hugger in the history of all time.
But one thing you can tell is that in addition to being the best hugger, she has the best voice of all time. And Becky and I, this is Kristen, Becky and Kristen get confused for each other all the time. We are, in fact, two people. But I hope that someday to be confused with your voice, Shelley, because it is voice goals.
Hey, what are you trying to say?
No, girl. Like, we're both. All right. Well, anyway, let's just move it right along.
My kids are going to disagree.
Okay, let's kick it off with political fuck, marry, kill. I actually have the fuck for the second week in a row. Woot, woot.
Congratulations.
After last week having Ashley's favorite fuck on the pod ever, I felt like I needed to come in strong again. So something if you didn't listen last week, one of the things that I talked about was my inspiration for activism to advocate for immigrants' rights and my love of art and doing murals. So the intersection of those two things and how if you aren't already advocating for a cause in your life, doing it through one of your passions is even in the darkest hours, one of the best ways to feel like you're really, truly doing something. So
a doubly fulfilling activism whammy.
Yeah. Win-win. And even if it's, when there's a cacophony of bad news coming out about whatever that cause is of yours, feeling like you're truly doing something within that wheelhouse of something that you really love, it feels just very empowering. So I saw... on Facebook yesterday, and we'll link to this in our show notes, Vicki Goodwin, who is a rep from Texas House District 47, which is my district. She's an amazing woman in her own right. She posted a link to a high school student, Bonnie Kim. She goes to Lake Travis High School. She had an art exhibition talking about safe storage of guns and gun violence. And it just really moved me, especially in light of the work that I'm doing with my own art. So I just want to read a little bit of her artist statement about it, and we'll link to her art as well so you guys can check that out. Bonnie says, "My portfolio directly addresses gun violence in America. In specific, it visually displays several perspectives of the now normalized high school shooting epidemic. My concentration topic arose from the initial shock I received from the Santa Fe High School shooting, which took place earlier this year in May." So this was last year when she did this. "It was a mere 2 hours away from my local high school I attended, and it was only then that I realized my odds of getting shot while receiving my education in America was an atrocious concept that I had to grasp, as opposed to my home country of South Korea, in which guns do not pose a threat to the general public. My art is meant to be a conversation starter and hopefully a series of works that will instigate change, eventually allowing for a safer America."
You guys, first, can I just interject here and say that young people are freaking blowing me out of the water. They just are wise beyond their years and are doing such amazing things to turn things around, especially on this issue of gun violence.
Yeah.
So good for Bonnie.
Yeah.
And good for Vicki, too, because Vicki has championed the cause of safe gun storage. And if you've heard her speak in virtually any arena, she tells a very poignant story of how she lost her dad and that her father was killed by a burglar who found a gun that was not stored in their home. So he was shot and killed by a gun that was not stored safely. And she has taken her personal story and turned it into a cause. So we're very fortunate to have Vicki representing us and being the voice to lead the charge when it comes to safe gun storage in Texas.
Yeah, no, she has done so much work with Texas Gun Sense. And, just preparing for this today, I went to the Texas Gun Sense website. So there's a whole slew of great bills right now that, if you're interested in advocating for those, we'll link to them in our show notes around safe storage, disarming domestic abusers, allowing local municipalities decide how they want to have open carry laws. So we'll link to all that in the show notes. And I just want to say again, Vicki, thank you so much for championing Bonnie and her art. And Bonnie Kim, thank you for advocating with your talents.
Love it.
Yeah.
Amazing.
All right, Becky, what are you marrying this week?
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so this is a little bit of a complicated Mary because it's related to something big that is still evolving actually right now as we're recording this podcast. So we're recording on Wednesday, May 15th, and what's going on right now at the Capitol is a lot of opposition to a bill that already passed the Senate, Senate Bill 9, and it's now
Wait, sorry. Raising my hand. What is Senate Bill 9?
Okay. Senate Bill 9 is a sweeping bill that would implement a whole bunch of restrictions around voting. And the folks who have filed this bill and are sponsoring this bill, what they claim is that this is a bill that is meant to protect our elections. But there are so many provisions in this bill, and many of them would do nothing of the sort when it comes to our elections.
So it's a sheep's clothing wrapped around a wolf that is trying to take your voting rights away.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah, it's basically blatant voter suppression. And so some of the things it would do, it would increase the penalty for innocent mistakes on voter registration forms. And I know from registering people to vote as a volunteer deputy registrar during the last election cycle, that people are already nervous about doing it wrong when they register to vote. A friend of mine who had a newborn baby at the time couldn't remember if he was already registered at his current address, and he was terrified to register with me because he was worried that if he was already registered, that he would be accused of voter fraud. And I think people, you know, they already have these fears because they hear these stories of people who make innocent mistakes and are prosecuted for them without this bill, which would make the increase those penalties for innocent mistakes on voter reg forms. So I know that, and many of other groups who are out there right now at the Capitol working on this issue, Move Texas, the Texas Civil Rights Project, Progress Texas, there's like a whole slew of organizations that are working to fight this bill. That's just one of the aspects of this bill. There are so many more. We'll link to more information about it, so I won't go through the laundry list here. So it's a really bad bill, but the Mary in all of this is the amazing reaction that the community has had to try and fight this bill and to try and defend our rights as voters and to try and make it easier for people to vote rather than intimidate people and make it harder for people to vote. So something that happened this morning that was really sneaky, the committee... So where this bill is in the process is the House Committee on Elections is hearing this bill. By the time you hear this episode on Friday, like, who knows what will have happened. Mm-hmm. But at least where we are right now on Wednesday afternoon is the committee was hearing testimony on the bill this morning. They started the hearing at 8 a.m. and then they closed registration where people can show, and we've talked about this before and we've done Instagram stories about how you go to the Capitol and you register for or against a bill and you also have the option to testify on it. So I went down and I signed up and I brought 20 copies of my testimony, as you're supposed to do when you go to testify for the committee hearing. At 8:30 a.m. after only 30 minutes into the hearing, they shut off the ability for people to register their opinion on the bill and to sign up to testify.
Is that normal?
No. So usually what happens, the problem is it's up to the discretion of the committee chair. And in this case, Representative Stephanie Click is the committee chair, and she wants Senate Bill 9 to pass. So she wants this bill to move through committee as quickly as possible so that it can go to the House floor for a vote as quickly as possible, because there's not much time left in this legislative session. We have like less than 2 weeks, I think. So people are trying to furiously pass bills because there's only so many that can be passed in the time that's left. So they really don't like the fact that more than 200 people had already showed up to register to testify by 8:30 this morning. So they shut it off. I heard a story of one guy who was in the midst. He had clicked against on the little iPad, and then the screen shut out because at the stroke of 8:30, it just kicked him out of the system. So that was really frustrating, especially for a lot of people who were coming to the Capitol from all over Texas to testify for the very first time, a lot of people. And,
You know, can I just say, hearing stories like this is what, you know, all of my friends who, like, you know, are, like, the cynical, like, your vote doesn't matter, things don't matter, trying doesn't matter. Like, this sort of stuff is the ammo for the cynicism around trying, right? Yeah. And it's so frustrating to hear this because, you know, one of the things we really fight against is doing something is better than nothing, right? Yeah. And then for people that are trying to do something, hearing this just, it makes me sick.
Totally. And, you know, that is by design because the people in power who want this bill to pass, they want people to be discouraged from coming out. So I have a couple of Marys in this whole murky scenario. First of all, the fact that more than 200 people showed up before 8:30 in the morning to register to testify on this bill is amazing in and of itself.
Is that a lot?
It is a lot. Most bills have 10 or less people that show up to testify. A lot have none. So that is a lot, especially for so early in the morning. And my second part of this, Mary, is so they shut off testimony. They shut off the ability for people to register to testify, which was really frustrating. A lot of people showed up late and were so discouraged.
But they didn't realize it was late until they got there.
No,
right?
No.
They didn't even announce.
They didn't announce that they were closing testimony at 8:30 until they started the hearing at 8 a.m.
So unless you got there before 8 a.m., yeah, you would have had no idea that getting there past 8:30 would equate being late because that's
totally
not normal.
And at that time, the visitor parking lot was already full. So people were driving around looking for parking still. Like, there was just a lot. There's a lot of obstacles that people were facing to try and get there. And then they get there and are so disappointed that they have been turned away from testifying. But here's one thing.
So to speak to what Kristen was saying here earlier about this being ammunition for cynicism or inaction, has there been the opposite of that? Has there been an impetus to action because of today?
Yes. So here's the next part that I super loved about what happened today. So people were frustrated that they were being turned away from testifying. And one of the most effective things that you can do while a committee is hearing testimony is to take to Twitter, because they can't take phone calls, but they have their cell phones with them and they're looking at Twitter and they're watching what people are saying about the bill that they are hearing. And so what was going on during this first part of the testimony is people were tweeting at the members of the elections committee saying, hey, there's so many of us that got turned away. Please open up registration for testimony again because we want our voices to be heard. And so one of the committee members actually moved to open registration again. And the chairperson, Stephanie Click, she said, we'll consider that during our break. So they took a break at 10 a.m. to go. All of them had to go to the House floor to take care of other business. And last I saw, they are still on the House floor, so they haven't gone back into committee yet. We haven't heard yet, as of this recording, whether they've decided to open up testimony or not. But here's another amazing thing that happened when people raise their voices, whether it's on Twitter or whether it's at the Capitol or whatever. Celia Israel, being the amazing rep that she is, she's one of our queens. Oh my gosh, she's one of our Central Texas reps and elections. She's on the elections committee. It's something that is so important to her. So she saw how frustrated people were that they weren't being allowed to testify. And she has directed people to email their testimony to her office. And this afternoon, Wednesday afternoon that we're recording, they held a people's hearing so that all the people who had been turned away could read their testimony in the Capitol outside of the House room. And also people were submitting their stories online. So I love that when we are told no, we don't take that for an answer. We find a way to speak up and to make sure that our voices are heard, and it makes things happen. Like,
so what you're saying is if people hadn't shown up as early as they did, if those 200 people hadn't been there, and if the people who gotten turned away, in addition to the 200 people, hadn't continued to tweet and make a ruckus out of mm-hmm. everything, then they probably would have just, passed it without fanfare and moved it onto a vote.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's
so it really did make a difference.
It totally did, and that's what I want to marry about this whole crazy day.
So that bill is still in committee.
It is currently being heard in committee.
By the time you hear this, there will probably be some resolution to the drama of whether it is taken out of committee or not.
Yes. And so as I understand it, what I was told today is the reason why we want to prolong the hearing is if we can prolong this hearing past midnight, it means that this bill won't be able to be put on the type of calendar where it's easy to get passed through the House. It would be pushed to a different calendar. And I don't totally understand how this all works, but this is how it was explained to me in simple terms. The calendar it would get pushed to if this hearing goes past midnight would make it easier for us to kill the bill instead of having it just sail through passage in the House. So that's the goal. And like, it's amazing that people are making it happen so far. We'll see. We'll keep you guys posted on our social media about what actually happens.
You're going back tonight, right?
I am, yeah. After I put the kids to bed, I'm going to go back to the Capitol with my 20 copies of my testimony and wait for my turn.
You're my superhero.
Get it, Becky.
You guys, I just have to say, you know, you talk about people being discouraged and feeling like their voices aren't heard, but it is so empowering when you show up and there are tons of other people, hundreds of other people who are there because they're passionate about the same thing as you. And even when there's obstacles being put in your way, that camaraderie that you feel, that sense of actually doing something and being there when you aren't wanted to, basically, it's very empowering. And if you haven't done it, I highly recommend it.
Mm. You want to marry them, and I want to marry you.
No.
All right. All right, Shelly. So this brings us to the dreaded kill. What do you want to kill this week?
Oh, my goodness. So this week, I, even though it has been a very long-term passion for me, I would like to kill the fact that people do not participate and vote in local elections.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We all know, and I am 99% sure that everyone has heard my broken record soapbox rant about the importance of local elections and the dismal rates of voter participation.
Here, I'll be the devil's advocate. Why? I don't think it's important. I don't even know. I don't want to go to that temporary building to vote because it smells weird and it doesn't really matter.
Oh, you guys can't see Shelly, but she's so worked up over there.
So there's a few different examples of local government, and I think it is a correct perception that a lot of times people do not vote because they don't understand what local government does.
Yes.
They don't understand what their city council person does, what their county commissioner does, what their justice of the peace does, what their local school board is responsible for. So when we have dismal, and dismal might not even be the word, it's a shit show of lack of participation in local elections. And one good example is the city council race that we just came through in Cedar Park, where our incumbent, she's an outstanding woman. Her name is Heather Sanders Jeffs, write that down, is currently waiting on a recount from election night because election night she was ahead by one vote.
Wait, and this week? Was this last week?
This was last Saturday,
May
4th.
Okay.
Was election day. You probably saw my hashtags out there. Text me after May 4th, Beto.
Yes.
Because we were busy working on our local election. But she has asked for a recount. Well, let me back up. Because after provisionals came in and after the late mail-in ballots came in, she was down by two.
This is literally what happens in Parks and Rec with Leslie Knope.
Two votes. I know, right? It's like,
it makes me want to shake every person who's like, my vote doesn't count, doesn't matter.
So many votes that could have counted that did not count. We went out election day. I block walked. My bestie was block walking with me. We had a slew of other block walkers in Cedar Park, and we knocked about 1,000 doors on election day. And we still came out with a one vote margin. So now this wonderful woman who has done some of the best work that has been done on Cedar Park City Council, including helping usher in our homestead exemption, lowering our property tax rate, helping Cedar Park turn towards more recycling and renewable energy. Mm. I know. She is amazing. Has now lost her election, we are fairly sure, by 2 votes.
Ugh, that's painful.
Because we cannot get action when it comes to local elections. So, moving forward from there, because I'm still upset about it, we have to realize that we can't take local elections for granted because there is a concentrated effort to remove progressive voices from local government and in all levels, whether it's city council or your school board or justice of the peace, and as I mentioned, county commissioner. So as we move through these election cycles, and Texas makes it harder for us to vote. Our voters go through cycles of voter fatigue because local elections are in May. Mm-hmm. National and federal elections are in November. Some state elections are in November. So you really have no idea when you're
Not
supposed
to
vote. Not to
mention primaries and runoffs.
Yes, yes. So, you know, we had people, we talked to them and like, hey, did you get a chance to vote? And they were like, yeah, I voted in November. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, not that one, buddy. So we have another one. We have another one going on, but I digress. Part of the other reason I am still fuming about local elections is the action of school boards. And school boards are elected positions. They're not paid positions, but they are still positions of power wherein we are enabling people who we don't know why they want to serve, right? Or their reasons for serving. But we do know that we are putting them in power and enabling them to, what's the word, impact the lives of our children.
And that'll, they're in charge of the school district's budget. So,
yes,
you know, money is power.
Money is power. And you have to be dedicated to using that money for the best of all of the children. Which leads me to my next part of my kill, which is lunch shaming. Mm. I am just still in a state of enragement about lunch shaming and the fact that we are still allowing lunch shaming to go on. Where?
Wait, sorry, you're probably about
no,
to
go
it.
Right ahead.
What is lunch shaming?
So there are different instances of lunch shaming. I will back up 40 some odd years because I am 49. And I've told you guys about very vivid memories I have of being in grade school and there being different colored lunch cards for the kids who had fully paid lunch, the kids who were on reduced lunch, and the kids who were on free lunches. Which at the time, although I realized it was embarrassing for those kids because their lunch cards were different and everyone could see it, I didn't realize why it was so embarrassing for them. And the fact that our government and our local school district felt like it was necessary to do this, where they could have just let them have a regular color lunch ticket. It really wouldn't matter. And they could just go through and get their lunch.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Thank you.
Or they could just have a list. With, like,
or they
the
could
kids
just have a list.
It,
yes.
You know,
so like, many easier ways to just feed children without it having to be an experience. So now we have instances. There's an instance right now where there's a GoFundMe going on for, where there's a kid who is trying to raise money to pay off lunch debt at 3 different schools in the Austin area.
Which, P.S., let's marry him.
Yes.
That's good. That's a good, we'll find a little silver lining in there.
We're going to find a small silver lining in there. So we have people who are, and again, young people who are taking the lead.
Mm-hmm.
They're
He's
leading
only
the
14,
charge.
This kid.
Yes. Trying to rectify what our school boards should be doing already. Representative James Tallarico had a moment during his campaign where he went and paid off the school district's lunch debt out in Hutto. We have instances around the country where we are trying to lift these kids out of the stigma and the shame of poverty when it's not their issue.
I don't understand. You know, there's so many statistics and so many data points around kids performing better in school when they're not hungry. Which, if, like, if you don't care about kids for kids, but, like, you know, just, like, the good Republican, like, you know, we're going to...
But what about the test scores?
Yeah, right, exactly.
Yes.
So, like, if, you know, just setting aside humanity for a second, but it's, you know...
as you do.
As one does.
When we talk about children.
You know, it's like, you know, it's common sense that, you know, kids are going to do better in school if they're not hungry, right? Mm-hmm. I don't understand why we can't build in the cost of two meals, breakfast and lunch. That's part of a public education in Texas.
And it's a choice.
Run for school board, Kristen.
Run for school board. We are making a choice to shame these kids. So lunch shaming has evolved from not just giving us different colored lunch tickets. It's evolved to now you have school debt and we're going to give you a shittier lunch.
Yeah, you get a cold cheese sandwich.
Cold cheese sandwich. Here you go. Enjoy that.
Didn't the CEO of Chobani, who is an immigrant in this country, didn't he just pay off the lunch? I think it was in, like, maybe it was Maine or something?
Rhode Island. He stepped in Rhode Island.
Yeah.
And they had to be shamed into taking the money. So if your humanity allows you to shame children and then you have to be shamed into doing the right thing, you might not be in office for the right reasons.
You should be stripped naked and flogged and then walked down to the Red Keep with the woman screaming behind you with a bell, shame.
While you eat a cold cheese sandwich.
Spoiler alert.
So
Game of Thrones.
Moving on from there, still on my whole school board rant because I can't let this go. When we talk about representation, not just at the city council level or within your civil service, within your police department, your fire department, especially with your school board. We have an instance right now in the area where I live where, in response to what was clearly a racist incident that was on social media, this one black man came and attended a school board meeting, and he sat and held a sign in response to what I will call a non-responsive, non-apology from the school district concerning that racist incident. And as he sat there with his sign, he sat there for about 2 hours, didn't say a word, just sat there in his blackness. And as he left, there were three police officers waiting for him.
Oh, my God.
Will you just share what his sign said? Because I don't know that our audience would think this, but some people, their knee-jerk response might be, well, what did his sign say? Did he deserve that? You know,
his sign said something along the lines of, racism is not a joke. LISD needs to respond appropriately.
So totally worthy
That's
of having
not,
a cop called.
Not scary at all.
Not scary at all. And the explanation given to the person I'm working with on this was that they felt like he was a credible threat as he sat there.
There's no other answer for that than implicit racism.
There you go, right there. So now we are dealing with their non-response to this incident where individuals in the community had to ask the police, they had to file freedom of information to get the police records for who called the police and why the police were called on this one black man who was just sitting there peacefully protesting. You know, so we have gone to the space where we don't have security and safety even in peaceful protest. Mm. And my question as I come out of all of this is, when we are not participating in local elections and you are looking at the representation that you have in your areas, what is that representation saying about your community? So if your community is literally feeling like one black man is a threat, do you need to look at who you are electing? Do you need to look at their lived experiences? Do you need to look at whether or not they are inclusive? Do they believe in diversity and not just diversity in race? Do they believe in diversity of gender, of life experience, economic prosperity or lack of prosperity? So I will say this and wrap up this very long and ranty kill.
You are like an assassin walking into the room and just pop, pop, pop.
With this admonition, and it is, stop electing narcissistic, ignorant assholes to your local government. Start electing people who have the best interest of your community at heart. You want the best representing everyone in your community. And that means you have to have some sort of balance. Yes, there will be conservatives on your local government, but you also have to have progressive voices, you know, and to go completely Marvel nerd on you. There is the possibility that if we don't activate at the local level, there will be like a Thanos level snap and progressive representation will disappear.
We will turn to dust.
So we won't have any say in what happens in our communities, and we can't let that happen. So I'm going to tell y'all now, if you sit on your ass before the election and you don't do the work, and then you sit on your ass election day and you don't get out to vote, your ass doesn't get to complain. Get out, do the work. That is the end of my kill for the
Woo!
Week.
I love
good
it.
Good one. And you're so right, because what Republicans have gotten so good at is building the bench. Because you know who runs for state legislature? People who were on school board, people who were on city council.
Ex-mayors.
And mayors. And you know who runs for Congress? People who were in the state legislature. So it's just a pipeline. And if we're not getting in that pipeline at the start, we're not going to be there, you
exactly.
know, at the end. Yes.
Well,
yes.
That was a brutal bloodbath of a kill. And I'm here for it. Thanks, Shelley. All right, guys, that's the end of Political Fuck, Marry, Kill for the week. Is there anything that we missed? Let us know online at any of the socials, RouserTX. All right, Becky, what do you know this week?
Okay, I'm gonna take us back a couple weeks first to episode 16, where we spoke about the impact women of color have on the outcome of elections here in this country. When we were talking about our experience getting to go to the historic She the People presidential candidate forum in Houston.
Which was amazing.
Oh my God. Yes. Shelley, like, was one of the people who worked really hard to make that happen. So thank you, Shelley.
It was just an epic adventure of a sea of like-minded and activated and roused and rabbled women. It was, I think, a one-of-a-kind experience for my lifetime.
Well, I hope that it is not a one-of-a-kind experience. I hope that many, many more She the People type forums start happening, because to me it's insane that it took so long for a candidate forum focused specifically on women of color, that it took this long for that to happen.
You know, I'm going to stop and give you guys a shout out real quick, because the ladies of Rouser were in the house at the She the People presidential forum. Those ladies were in the candidate spaces getting their questions answered. One point, Kristen was holding up the flags. I mean, they were working hard to bring you the news. So I am so proud of what you ladies did that day. And you traveled to Houston and it was windy as hell and all kinds of stuff was jumping off. But you were there doing the work to keep your listeners informed, and I am grateful.
Thank you. That's a very kind compliment. You know, one thing that we noticed, and this is totally an aside, we were really trying to ask the candidates questions that championed the perspective of women of color. And we were really shocked being in the press gaggle that none of the other national press were doing that.
Almost none of them.
Yeah.
Wanted to focus on the actual the reason point of for the rally. Forum.
I digress. Keep on going, Becky.
Yeah. Well, thank you for saying that, Shelley. I'm not going to stop talking about women of color on the Rabble, because to me, the resilience and resourcefulness that women of color have had to summon over the entirety of human civilization is truly amazing, and it is a real travesty to me that more women of color aren't in power in this country. And so that's what we're focusing on today for the Did Y'all Know. You know, by all accounts, and the reason why this presidential forum, She the People, where eight presidential candidates responded to questions from women of color, why this took place is because by every measure, women of color are the backbone of the Democratic Party. They're the ones that are behind the scenes, on the ground, doing the hard work of getting democracy done. But they aren't being elevated to seats of power, making decisions at the highest levels to the same degree as other parts of the population. And I think it's time for that to stop. Currently, so here's some stats to throw at you guys. Texas has 4 women of color representing us in the U.S. House of Representatives out of 36 total reps. So if you are not good at math in your head like I'm not, I will just tell you that is 11% of our U.S. reps are women of color. Shout out to Sylvia Garcia and Veronica Escobar, woo! Our first ever Latinas to serve in Congress. So awesome. And at 11%, we are only slightly better than the U.S. as a whole, where women of color are only 8.8% of all 535 members of Congress. We have no women of color in statewide executive office. That's positions like governor, secretary of state, or comptroller. Although, shout out to Joy Chevalier, an amazing woman of color who ran an awesome race for comptroller in Texas in 2018.
I love her so much.
She's an entrepreneur and just like a generally wonderful human being.
And like, which blows my mind with her accomplishments. The first time I got to hear her speak, I was just like, damn, this woman's amazing.
Yeah, she may riff to you in Latin. It just kind of depends.
She's incredible. But it's not just president, or it's not just candidates in elected office. It's also the highest levels of campaign staff. So there are only three women of color who've ever served as campaign manager on a presidential campaign, one of whom is currently working for presidential candidate and Texan Julian Castro. Her name is Maya Rupert, and I fell in love with her recently after reading an interview she gave the New York Times, which we'll link to in the show notes, so you can fall in love with her too. Anyhow, these are all pretty dismal statistics, which is why I absolutely love what Ashanti Golar, political director of Emerge America and founder of the Brown Girls Guide to Politics, is doing to encourage and support women of color who want to get involved in politics. Shirley Chisholm was the first black woman elected to U.S. Congress, and she once said, "If they don't give you a seat at the table, bring a folding chair." And it sucks that 51 years after Shirley was elected, black women in America still have to bring a fucking folding chair. But I'm so hopeful that the work that Ashanti and so many other amazing people are doing will make that saying obsolete within our lifetimes. Today on The Rabble, we are so excited to welcome Ashanti Golar. She is the political director of Emerge America, and she's the founder of the Brown Girls Guide to Politics. She's also a lifelong politics enthusiast. And Ashanti, I love that you say you preferred C-SPAN over Sesame Street when you were a kid.
I did. I was that weird kid. I was just, give me some C-SPAN. I mean, I can learn the same things that I'll learn on Sesame Street. There's people talking about history. You got to count votes. So I also learned how to argue at a young age due to C-SPAN.
That's so awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. We're so happy to have you.
Thank you. It's an honor to be on.
Well, I love this. The fact that you started the Brown Girls Guide just about a year ago, the Brown Girls Guide to Politics. And for those of you who don't know, it is a resource and a community and support for women of color who wanted to get involved in politics. And I love that you created this because you saw that nobody else was really addressing the particular challenges that women of color face when they want to get involved in politics. And congratulations on your first year anniversary, which I think just passed recently.
It was April 24th.
Well, that's so exciting. And the Brown Girls Guide to Politics started as a blog, and now you also have an excellent podcast where you've talked to some amazing women like Stacey Abrams. So in your time running the Brown Girls Guide, what are some of the most common concerns that you hear from women of color who are looking to get involved in politics?
So the biggest thing that I hear from women is they just don't know how to get started, because even though it's 2019, politics is still very much majority white. And it makes women think, particularly women of color, that there isn't a place for them outside of voting. And the fact is, we know that when it comes to the Democratic Party, women of color are the base of the Democratic Party. Black women are the base of the base of the Democratic Party. But people only want to talk to us when they need our votes. And we can have so many roles in this political ecosystem. We can be the candidates. We can be the organizers. We can be the activists. We can be the ones writing the policy. And I really wanted to give women an opportunity to see themselves in all of these roles. And in order to do that, I thought a great way would be to have women that I could interview on the blog, on the podcast, and they could tell their stories and how they got started. Because at the end of the day, everyone does start somewhere. We see these people. I fangirl over Stacey Abrams, Deb Haaland, Ayanna Pressley, Kathy Tran, Jennifer Carroll Foy. But they all one day woke up and said, okay, I'm going to start organizing on college. Or organizing my college, I'm going to start going to these PTA meetings and making more change. So letting women know that these women are just like them. So that was the biggest thing that we hear, is that women don't know how to get started. But then when they do get started and they're in it, how do you navigate this world? So to help them figure out, okay, this is how you deal with this type of person, that type of person, respond to this situation by sharing our struggles. But in sharing our struggles, what I'm really hoping is that I'm making it easier so that women won't have to have those struggles by fighting these battles early on and trying to get away with all the systematic problems that women and women of color have to face in politics.
I really love that. And I also, you know, I know that your community that you created is designed for women of color. But I have to say, as a white lady who wants to figure out these systemic issues, it's been really wonderful to me, for me, to listen to the stories of the women on your podcast, because it helps me have a window into struggles that I haven't faced. And I wouldn't have known how to address them unless I was hearing about them from people who have faced them. So just a plug for any of our listeners, even if you're not a brown girl, it's still super, super relevant to you as an activist and a progressive who wants to create change, to check out the Brown Girls Guide, because it's helpful for all of us.
Yeah, and thank you. I love hearing that, because even though it is for women of color, I love that there's so many non-women of color that read the blog, listen to the podcast. I had a guy today who sent me a DM on Twitter, and he's like, I know it's not for me, but I stand this podcast. I just love hearing what all of these women are saying, because it is important, if you are in politics or just in life, to understand what it is like for us when we are in that room and we're the only person of color, and the things that we have to deal with, and just the fights and the struggles that we have. But also when we get to talk about our successes, mm-hmm. and our triumphs, I really do want our white allies to feel that they can be a part of this journey with us, because no one can do it alone. As women of color, we cannot change this system by ourselves. We do need our white allies, especially because when it comes to talking about these hard truths such as racism, there's a lot more credibility to it when a white person calls out another white person on their racism. Mm. And you have to break those bonds of white solidarity. And I do hope that by listening to the podcast and reading the blog, that our white allies are learning too how to be better allies.
Well, I know that you were involved recently in the She the People Forum, and we talked about it recently on our podcast, and it's crazy to me that it took so long for this forum to exist. It seems insane that it didn't before. I'm curious to know, like, your experience of that forum and what that was like for you.
The forum was amazing, and I just have to shout out Amy Allison, the founder of She the People. She's also a friend. And it was a year ago in April when I was out in San Francisco, and she just said, are you going to be out here anytime soon? And I said, yes, actually next week. And she said, let's get together. And she told me about She the People and what she had wanted to do, and that she was going to start off with a summit in San Francisco, and would I come on board the organizing committee to help steer it? And I said, absolutely, Amy, this is just so needed, because if women of color want to have this type of platform, we have to create it ourselves, and you're the perfect person to do this, due to her work with Democracy in Color and the new American majority and the rising American electorate. So we had that summit, which was packed and truly beautiful. And then I saw her a month later, and she said, okay, it's time to start planning the forum. We're going to do it in Houston, Texas. What do you think? Will these presidential candidates come? And I responded, if they're smart, they will come. This is definitely a space that they want to be in. But the energy around it was just so amazing. At Emerge America, we started our day by partnering with other training groups to train the women who were there that wanted to run for office or wanted to learn how to become a campaign staffer or were interested in volunteering. So we incorporated that piece, because we have 1,700 women there. So it's great to have them talk to the presidential candidates, but we wanted to give them other information as well. And the forum was just so spectacular. I loved the format by having the co-moderators, Amy Allison and Joanne Reed. But for me, the fact that so many of the questions came from women of color who were sharing their real life experiences. You had a domestic worker, you had a waitress who was talking about tips, and that if she doesn't flirt back with the guy or give him her number, she's not going to get a tip, and how that impacts her well-being and how that is a part of sexual harassment and the Me Too movement. You had Indigenous women talking about what are you going to do to make things better for tribal communities. And when you have these women asking these questions, you cannot discount their real life lived experiences. And this is what Women of Color go through. This is what voters go through. And so many of the candidates had really wonderful, thoughtful answers. I feel that some of the other ones, I was a little confused. I was just thinking, okay, you knew where you were coming. You kind of didn't prepare. So I don't know what that answer was. You really dodged the question. But we're still talking about it with how great it was. People are still writing about it. I'm seeing tweets about it. But it was very upsetting that it took so long to have that forum. It's 2019, and this is the first time when presidential candidates have the opportunity to come and speak to a room full of women of color who are going to vote. So again, kudos to Amy for putting this together. Thankful to all of the amazing partners that did the work, the steering committee, and another shout out to Jessica Bird, who helped lead the effort. She runs 3-Point Strategies, and they're always all in about making life better about women of color. If it's working with She the People or the Collective Path with their Black Campaign School. So even that forum, every aspect of it was put on by women of color too. And I think that's something that people aren't talking about. Mm. And it's something that added to the forum to make it so special.
It was really special. And I want to go back a little bit to what you said about a lot of times women of color aren't given a platform, so you have to create your own, which is exactly what you've done with the Brown Girls Guide to Politics and exactly what Amy Allison did with the She the People Forum. In the year that you've been running the Brown Girls Guide, have you seen any signs that the mainstream is starting to create more space for women of color?
I'm not, unfortunately. I'm not at all. It really goes back to us creating these spaces for ourselves. I'm very honest, when I started the Brown Girls Guide, it was just kind of a hobby. I was just thinking, okay, I'm going to ask some of my friends who are in politics if they'll do this with me and share their stories. We'll probably get 10 readers a month. And then it really took off. And then we had the opportunity to do the podcast with Wonder Media Network, because they saw also that this was missing from the conversation, and they are a woman-owned audio media company. So it's really, again, women and women of color continuing to create these spaces. I hope that it changes in the future, but I don't see it right now, which is really unfortunate. It's particularly how women and women of color sway conversations, how we move the needle on things. You would think that the mainstream media in particular would really want to start to harness their energy and invest in women of color and giving them these platforms. But unfortunately, that's not the case.
That is disappointing. But I am ever the optimist. And I really hope that after the clear enthusiasm that the She the People Forum created, I'm hoping that maybe that will start to be a turning point, and the mainstream culture and media and political machine will hopefully start to give more credit and more attention where it's due.
I hope so too. So hopefully we'll be able to have another conversation about how they're so much better in the near future.
I hope so. I would love to know what has been the most gratifying thing about running the Brown Girls Guide, and if there's a particular moment that stands out for you.
What's really gratifying for me is when women come up to me who I don't know, and I get confused that they even know who I am, but they say, thank you for starting this. because I see myself in what you all write about, what you talk about. I've gone through those situations, and it's just really helping me cope and understand more that I'm not the only one who has to deal with this. We recently had the episode with Kaya Morris air, and she was the only Black woman in the Vermont state legislature, and she had to resign due to severe racist threats that she got. And so many women have reached out about that podcast in particular, just saying that everything she said just really resonated with me. And even for me recording that podcast, when she was telling so many of these stories, I started to get tears in my eyes because she was literally just talking about things that I had been through. And I'm also getting messages from women who are running for office, and they're saying the blog and the podcast is really keeping us going. We wait for the new blog to pop up, for the podcast to drop, because it's letting us know that we have a right to be running for office and that we can represent people well, no matter what negativity that we're getting. So for me, that's what is gratifying, is the fact that women of color actually love it and that they know that we are doing this for them completely and totally out of love. I actually say this is my love letter to women of color who love politics.
Well, I'm so happy that you followed your heart and you are writing this love letter, because clearly it's so needed and you're giving people community of support that that they weren't able to find before. So something you always ask the guests on your podcast is what advice they would give to the brown girls listening to the Brown Girls Guide. And I'd love to know what your favorite response has been so far.
You know, when I ask this question, almost every person chuckles and laughs, which I always find like really interesting. But everyone's response has been truly amazing. But I think it really reflects their journey that they've been on with the advice that they're giving. So you hear Stacey Abrams say, "Don't be me, be you," which is such a Stacey Abrams answer. We have an episode coming up with Aditi Hardikar, who was the AAPI and LGBTQ liaison in the Obama administration. And her advice is to find your passion. It's such a great episode, and I can't wait for people to hear it. And we have Ayanna Pressley, who also dropped some great gems. But I think everything that they say, I love, and I really enjoy ending the podcast that way by having these spectacular women give advice. And just every nugget that they say is just truly special to me. And I hope that other people feel that it's special as well, and that they can take some of this advice and implement it in their political journey or just whatever journey that they're on.
Okay, so I have to ask, what is your advice for the brown girls listening to The Rabble right now and thinking, I want to be just like Ashanti?
And then I laugh when I get the question. So my advice is, don't be like me, be better than me. Mm-hmm. And I think with this podcast, it is bringing all these women together so that we can really uplift the next generation of brown girls who want to do this work. And to realize that as you embark on doing this, there are times when it's going to be really hard. You will feel very alone. You will feel that people don't understand you, but definitely keep going. Because even with me, the person that people see today, this was not the Ashanti who arrived in D.C. on January 1st, 2008, had her first day at the Democratic National Committee on January 3rd, 2008, and then like went home and cried because she was all stressed out, just thinking, oh my gosh, this is madness. What did I get into? Because it was the first day of the Iowa presidential caucus in 2008.
Wow.
So just realize that it's a journey and there's a lot of growth, and don't be afraid of that growth, because I'm a person who absolutely loves growing. I love getting older. I love learning new things. So don't let the hard times get you down. Just embrace them because they're going to make you better and stronger in the long run.
Very good advice for anybody, I think, not just brown girls, but all of our listeners. So before I let you go, I'd love to know what are some organizations we can support that are doing a good job of being inclusive.
Oh, yes. Well, I hope everyone will support Emerge. We are actually developing an affiliate in Texas that's going to launch later this year, and I am so excited. You can also support other organizations such as The Collective Pact, Run for Something, Vote Run Lead, She Should Run, Emily's List, Repower. There's amazing organizations out there, and we actually list all of them on the BGG website, which is just www.thebgguide.com, and we call them Brown Girl Friendly Organizations. And there's a ton of them where you can go get involved if you want to run for office, if you want to learn how to be a campaign staffer, or if you just want to find opportunities to support women of color that are running.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad to be able to point people to those resources and all the amazing information and stories and support that you've pulled together there. So we'll definitely link to all of that in our show notes. And I thank you again so much for being with us today, Ashanti Golar, founder of the Brown Girls Guide to Politics and political director of Emerge America. Thank you for everything that you're doing.
Thank you so much.
One of the things that I admire so much about Ashanti and her work with Emerge and the Brown Girls Guide to Politics is that she makes the issues that women of color, Black women especially, face when we try to move into these positions of power or we try to get involved in politics at whatever level, she makes them easy to understand for people who have not lived our experience. I think she said something about how she had gotten a message from a man who was not of color about how much he enjoyed the podcast because it made those things easier for him to not necessarily relate to, but to understand. And one of the things that I admire about what you do, especially with this series of conversations that you are having about women of color in politics, is that you are not afraid to ask the hard questions, which is the only way we learn, right? But what I also know about you, Miss Becky, is that you don't wait until you are in the presence of someone famous to ask these questions. You don't wait until you're talking to Ashanti or you're talking to Stacey Abrams or Kamala Harris or whomever. You find the knowledge where it is. So I've been able to have discussions with you about women in color in politics, and I know that you have the common sense and the wherewithal to know that the answers are in front of you. You know, so if you're out there asking that question and you just happen to be a non-person of color and you want to know what non-persons of color can do to help women of color, ask the woman of color who is sitting next to you. You don't wait until there's someone with a state or national profile to ask those questions. You, again, have the common sense and the wherewithal to ask the questions of people that who are in your community, the Black women that you know, the women of color that you know who can answer that question for you. So I will, again, shout out Dr. Carla Braley, who is the vice chair of the Texas Democratic Party. We have this fantastic woman of color, extremely educated, and the research that she has done on Barbara Jordan, y'all should go look that up. Yes, girl, yes. So we have such a huge opportunity to bring women in community via information, right? And Ashanti has made that information easy to understand, palatable for everyone, and it's just out there in the stratosphere for you to pick up if you want. And then Becky and Kristen and Ashley, that's it. She's going to go me. Becky and Kristen and Ashley are using their voices to amplify the voices of those who can't always be heard. And my boss, Royce Brooks, always has this closing admonition where she talks about those of us who are in the rooms not being afraid to use our voice to help those who are outside of the room, regardless of what it means to you personally, if it's going to impact you personally or impact your job or your status. Are you brave enough to use your voice as non-women of color to help people who aren't in the room and don't even have a folding chair because they haven't made it through the door. So yeah. I appreciate you for doing that. I appreciate Ashanti for what she is doing. I appreciate my boss for what she does. So thank you all for bringing us into community so we can get forward with the business of saving democracy.
Oh, thank you, Shelley. That's really nice. But I just have to say that, you know, I might not have always taken the approach that I'm currently taking. I am on a path of learning. And
it's an evolution.
Totally. And I probably have not always been, you know, as wise about who to ask questions of and what questions to ask and how to go about this learning. It's a process. So, you know, if you have found yourself doing the wrong thing at the wrong time, you know, try to be a little easy on yourself. And, you know, when you know better, you start to do better. But yeah. First, you have to know better.
And it is uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. It's uncomfortable to confront the things that that are not explicit but implicit in you and in your culture, or in me and in my culture, right? It's things that you know, as you're moving through these spaces and listening more than talking, you know, and realizing the things that you've been complicit in, it is very uncomfortable, and it is hard, right? Mm-hmm. But it's necessary, and it's something that you know, I think it's really easy for people who have had a lot of privilege to get really defensive because it might not be something that you chose consciously to be a part of, but we are a part of it. Yeah. And so, you know, just encouraging people to, and then really encouraging myself more out loud than anything else, just say, you know what, this is uncomfortable and that's okay.
It's more uncomfortable for people of color who have been systematically excluded from everything for forever.
Right.
So, like, we can take on a little discomfort.
Just, let's just stop being so defensive and just start listening a lot more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, go team.
Go team.
All right.
All right, Kristen, what's our shit to do?
Okay, so my shit to do for the week, guys, my personal shit, is I'm getting my tubes tied.
What?
Come on.
Things are going to hell in an ultrasound around here. I don't know if you've noticed. And
looking at you, Alabama.
Yeah, and Georgia and Ohio.
And let's be honest, Texas too.
Yeah, it's down the road. It's coming. So yeah, thinking about getting my tubes tied. I looked it up online. The average cost of a tubal ligation, depending on your health insurance, can be anywhere from $0 to about $6,000.
Oh, you know, just that small range.
Yeah. Change.
It seems like there's got to be a better use of our money. And wait, let's back up one second for people who, like, don't live on Twitter or, you know, paying attention to what's going on. We're talking about some really heinous bills that got passed in some states, basically outlawing abortion. And criminalizing it.
Yeah. In Georgia specifically, Georgia's governor just signed into law a bill that criminalizes abortion. It criminalizes miscarriage that could be mistaken for abortion. So if you have a miscarriage and go to a medical professional for help, you might find yourself being interrogated to determine whether your miscarriage was in fact an botched abortion. You can't even leave the state to get an abortion in a different state without fear of the same criminal penalties as getting an abortion in the state.
Like, they're going to hunt you down? This is crazy.
Yeah. And it's an exception. There's no exception for rape or the health of the mother.
Or incest. Yep. No, just...
So I have a question about this. Mm-hmm. As we are delving into the violation of women's bodies and their rights, my question is about HIPAA.
Yeah.
How are these states getting around HIPAA to look at a woman's medical records, you know, to determine whether or not she's had a botched abortion or she's actually miscarrying? Mm. How are doctors getting around this?
There's a lot of questions.
There's a lot of questions.
Great questions that I'm sure the ACLU is going to bring up in their lawsuit.
Yes.
Speaking of the ACLU.
So maybe instead of a few thousand dollars on a...
on tuba ligation.
Let's kick a bunch of organizations who are going to fight the good fight some money. That's our shit to do this week to save our reproductive rights.
What a great idea. I hadn't even thought about that.
The ACLU is going to need some dollars. My personal favorite right now is this organization Run for Something. We actually had a Run for Something candidate on recently to talk about her experience as a first-time candidate who was being supported by Run for Something. But this is an organization that is focused on these races that all the rest of us are not watching while we're looking at the president and the Senate. Mm-hmm. They are looking at these state legislatures, these seats in the House and the Senate in the states, where these decisions about women's bodies are being made by white old men who don't know anything
about. Who think that an ectopic pregnancy can be taken and put inserted into your uterus. If you don't know what that is, just look it up. It's the stupidest thing ever.
Yeah. So
literally the stupidest thing ever.
Run for Something is trying to raise a bunch of money so that they can get these old, really bad dudes out and replace them with people who know what the fuck is up with a woman's body and why she needs to be in charge of it. We'll link to a bunch more organizations that you can support that are fighting the good fight on this reproductive health issue. Okay, that's it for our show. Thank you so much, Shelley, for joining us this week.
It has been an epic adventure. Thank you.
Well, we love you. And thank you to everybody for listening. We miss you, Ashley. Come back soon. Please, everybody, tell your friends to listen to The Rabble if you like it. Give us a 5-star rating. Follow us on social media @RouserTX. And we'll talk to y'all next week. Bye.
Bye.